Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Missed Apex podcast. Just thinking about paid drivers. Just feels like these days, I don't know. Seems like every seat's got a price. I wonder how they sleep at night. When the cash comes first and the points come second, just stop for a minute and drive. Why is Patty so serious? Acting so damn mysterious. Got Rob on your side and you're standing so low that you can't even tell us just why. Paul DeResta to your left, Pascal Wehrlein to your right. But did you see that? Yeah, we signed a paid driver tonight. It's all about the money, money, money. We just want your money, money, money. We don't worry about the lap times. It's all about the ship price. It's all about the, cha-ching, cha-ching. All about the, yeah, bubbling, bubbling. Wanna make the book soar. Not worry about the point score. We need to take it back in time. When racing made us all unite. And it wasn't just cash and video clips. Am I the only one getting tired? Why is everyone so obsessed? Money can't buy championships. Can we all slow down? Not the drivers though, they need to go fast. Look, Missed Apex, we're cash money too. Patreon supported, but we're a podcast. You missed the Apex. It's all about the money, money, money. But we just want your money, money, money. We don't worry about the lap times. It's all about the ship price. It's all about the, cha-ching, cha-ching. All about the, yeah, bubbling, bubbling. Wanna make the book soar. Not worry about the point score.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by the British Rental Kart Championship. Today's episode is called, I'm Going to Leave the Shed. This week we took a look at the F1 news and listened to some interviews from December's Autosport Awards. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How's it going there, Matt?
Oh, it's going great. It's nice to be back in the shed.
It's the first show back in the shed for me. Of course, you and Chris have been doing e-radio already, but for me, I'm all a flutter for my first show of 2018.
And you should be. We have a bouncing chat room to join us, don't we?
If you want to join the chat room, go to YouTube and look for Missed Apex Podcast. Click subscribe and the little bell, and you'll get a notification every time we go live. We're also joined by Autosport's Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
Yeah, it's going great. It's just so good to be back on Missed Apex. As soon as I heard the music coming on again, it's just, it's butterflies in the stomach. I love it.
We've had like nearly a month away from this live stream, and every time a news topic comes up, I'm like, I want to argue with Chris and Matt about it, and it's not the same over WhatsApp.
No, we've got to make up for all the arguments we've missed out on over the last month just in this one show.
Deal. Chris, we're spending some real lifetime together soon, but we'll talk about that a bit later, shall we?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Are you going to testing? If you're not, shall we go? Let's book a holiday together.
I currently have no plans for testing, so yeah, go for it.
Is it not something that appeals to you to just go as a mere punter now that you've tasted the elixir of being a paddock journalist?
I think once you've done one race in sort of my position, you struggle to go back, you know? I mean, I happily watch it on the telly, but otherwise... Fair enough.
Tell you what, why don't we just do a shout out to anyone in the paddock? Why not invite me and Chris, but more importantly me, to come and be your guest and show me around and make me feel special? Is that so much to ask? If you're listening to this, then you must enjoy what we do. Therefore, spread the love. Look, what I'm really here to do is to remind you that we are an independent podcast hosted by MissedApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. All right, let's look at some big dirty news. Big dirty news. Well, of course, the big dirty news this week is the fact that Williams have confirmed their driver lineup. Unfortunately, Robert Kubica did not get the drive, and it's gone to Sergei Sorokin to partner Lance Stroll. But Jake Sanson went on behalf of Downforce Radio to December's Autosport Awards. It's not that long ago, and it was pre-decision, but it's still very interesting to hear what Robert thought about his journey towards even this point of getting to Formula One. And, you know, since the decision, he said that this is not the end of the dream. So I think this is relevant as well. And we'll just hear a quick interview with Paddy Lowe too. So excuse the audio. We've done our best to clean it up, but this is on the red carpet from Autosport.
So on the red carpet with us here at the Autosport Awards is the Polish superstar, Robert Kubica. Robert, it's great to have you here at the Autosport Awards.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Nice to see you. And yeah, let's enjoy the evening.
So obviously, we're going to talk a tiny bit about the hype. Obviously, there's a chance you could be in the Williams Formula One car for next year. But over the last 6 months, it's kind of gone from a one-off test in a Renault, your old team, to the potential of a proper Formula One drive. When was the start of this whole journey to potentially get you back into the seat? How did it all happen?
Well, it happened quite, let's say, surprisingly in the end. We had a chat with Renault. For opportunity for me to organize a test with the 2012 car, and the first test has been in June, so it was over 6 years that I was not driving F1 car, and actually it happened in Valencia, the circuit which I drove for the last time F1 car before my accident. So it has been a special moment and very great feeling, and to from that point onwards the confidence has grown up that with good preparation, with the good opportunities, I could do it. Then I had, of course, another test with Renault, and finally I had a great opportunity with Williams to test with them. In the end, we have done 3 days of testing. Yeah, three and a bit. First two of them were with 2014 car, and last test in Abu Dhabi with 2017 car. So that has been quite tough, intense period for me, nice and enjoyable months, but they have been quite hard work, and you know, to overcome with all my limitations and to make sure I'm able to do it. It has not been easy, but the confidence is there, the feeling has improved, and as I said, in the end, it's a great moment for me. But of course, we are here, you know, to I think. Yeah, last 6 months has I think I have done quite a lot, and to prove that although I have limitations, I can do it, and I think that's the biggest point.
And we've seen you do so much in the last 6 years since your last Grand Prix. Obviously, we've seen you in World Rallying, winning a championship in WRC2. You've tested for DTM in World Endurance Championship, and now here we are again talking about Formula One next year. If the drive doesn't happen, is that it, or will we push for a seat in 2019? I mean, is this now full time? You want to be in Formula One again properly all the way?
I think everything can happen in life in general. I think my example is a good example, you know, in bad and in good. I think honestly, if it doesn't happen this year, I will have to find something else to do. But let's wait and see, and just live day by day and try to make it happen.
It'll be an amazing story. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Yeah, certainly an incredible journey that he's been on. But I think finding out that he was kind of as surprised as we all were about his opportunity to come back was sort of surprising, because I'd got the impression that, Chris, he was, you know, all the time fighting back and looking at that Formula One spot. So interesting to hear that it was just sort of out of the blue a little bit.
Well, 5 years ago, we were thinking he'd never drive a Formula One car again. So, yeah, definitely a surprise for us. It's nice to know that it was a surprise for him as well.
So, Matt, are you saddened now when you hear the optimism in his voice?
Well, a bit. But honestly, although I don't think in some ways it may have been the optimum choice for Williams, it was by far the most rational choice, given the amounts of money involved that everybody was playing with, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised that he hasn't gotten the drive at all. I mean, you spent 6 years out of F1 through injury. You need to ease yourself back into it. You know, I'm almost slightly surprised they haven't found a Formula 2 drive for him this year, just to kind of bring him back up to speed with single-seater racing.
Interesting. And that point will definitely come up in a little bit. But let's just get the whole story of Williams, because the Kubica story fits into this a bigger narrative of what's going on with one of Formula One's most iconic clubs and teams. And Jake Sanson also caught up with Paddy Lowe at the same time. So let's hear from Paddy now.
So we're here on the red carpet at the Autosport Awards, and with me is one of the technical directors at Williams. It is Paddy Lowe. Paddy, great to have you here at the Autosport Awards.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
So obviously, there's a lot of news stories running around the Williams team for next year, as in who's going to be alongside Lance Stroll. But let's talk about the progress that's been made through the season with Felipe and with Lance. It's been a great opening campaign for Lance, getting the podium in Baku, and Felipe has bowed out on a high. Everything seems to be really buzzing at Williams for a good 2018 season ahead.
Yeah, we had a mixed season, but had some really good high points, as you mentioned. We had the only podium of the year that wasn't scored by the top three, actually, with Lance in Baku. Also, his front row qualifying position from the wet qualifying in Monza was a real high. And Felipe also had a great season. I had not worked with him before this year, but by all accounts, he was operating at the very highest level we've seen in his whole career. So it was great to work with both of those drivers. But we want to make a step forward next year. Fifth is not where we want to be. We're designing our new car, obviously, and hope to make some progress with that and move further up the grid.
Now, you've worked with a lot of rookie drivers and world champions over the last few years. Just how do you rank Lance Stroll? I mean, his first year, he's had some good races, some poor ones. He's had things out of his control more times than one over the course of the year. Where do you rank him in terms of his raw ability as a driver?
Well, I don't rank drivers ever on sort of numbers. They're all different. They all have different strengths and weaknesses. I think what's intriguing with Lance is that he's shown a tremendous talent on occasion, and other times really struggled, and it's been a difficult year. The cars are very difficult to drive, as we know. Some of the, you know, these are the most performant cars in the history of the sport. So I think in his case, what's great is to try and focus on the good stuff and see if we can make that up here every weekend. You know, still go back to the qualifying in the wet in Monza. You know, it's often said that what a driver can do in the wet is a sign of his real talent. And we saw there that there was no smoke and mirrors there. That was his pace. You know, he put the car there in P3 and then promoted to P2 with grid penalties. So, you know, that was genuine pace.
And now, of course, we've got this merry-go-round with Robert Kubica, Paul de Resta, Pascal Wehrlein, Danny Kvyat, all in contention for the seat. It must be a difficult proposition when you're this close to the new car, and obviously you need to get the data in there, and we still don't know who the second driver is going to be. I mean, is there a closer development to that, or is it still up in the air at the moment?
It's something we're working on, and we'll let you all know in good time. I know there's a lot of focus on it because we're the last seat left to be declared for 2018. But you know, it's actually an interesting process. You know, driver is one of the most important employees in the team, and I think it's very exciting to have all those different possibilities.
Well, we know it's Williams, so they'll make the right decision. We wish you all the best for 2018, Paddy. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, wasn't it interesting? Jake asked actually a really great question, which is, where do you rank Lance Stroll? And obviously, he's not going to come out and go, ugh, looked a bit shaky there at points. I thought he was going to avoid the question. But actually, Chris, he did answer it pretty honestly, but then just turned around and tried to highlight the good things. But he didn't turn around and go, nah, he's on the pace.
No, exactly. I mean, I think he pretty much answered the question how most people would answer a question about Lance Stroll, in that he's sort of still a little bit of an enigma about where his abilities lie. He's obviously a fine racing driver, but whether, you know, he was quite ready for F1 last year, or whether he still is, you know, ready for F1 and going into 2018. So yeah, that's one to look out for this season, I feel.
Yeah, but Matt, there was never any doubt that Stroll was going to be almost their number one driver this season. So that's a question no one was asking. It was obviously all about the second driver. And we all thought it was going to be Robert Kubica. And in the end, he was deemed not rich enough. Oh, can we edit that? I mean, not fast enough. But look, the lap times were slower, reportedly, than Sergei Sorokin. And he's not as funded. So can we really blame Williams at all?
Well, you can always blame Williams. If it doesn't turn out well, it will be totally their fault for having made this choice. But the reality of the matter is, Kubica has been out of the sport for 6 years. And in those 6 years, the biggest thing that has changed about the cars, in a lot of ways, has been the tires and how they work. And this has been, according to all accounts, what has caught him out the most. And even though he made progress from drive to drive to drive, and everyone said he was getting better, the fact of the matter is, you're taking somebody who is a veteran, who has an injury, who's been out of the sport for 6 years, and if you sign him to be your second driver, you're betting that he will really be able to master the tires. Now, the flip side of that for Williams is that, by all accounts, the engineering staff there love him for the feedback he provides, and they are in desperate, desperate need of that feedback, as they seem to have really lost their way with the car over the last few seasons, whether it's wind tunnel correlation issues or other things. And maybe Paddy has sorted it out, maybe he hasn't, but having somebody with Kubica's ability to communicate with the engineers in a race seat on a regular basis will go a long way towards helping Williams build the car they have the funding to build, quite frankly.
That's an interesting picture he's painting there, Chris, because they're almost saying that they didn't string him along. There was a genuine chance he was going to be there, but now that he doesn't have that ultimate one lap pace, they've decided to fall back on his feedback. He's sort of turned into just a career test driver now till he's 40. Like, who was the Ferrari guy who kept doing the test driver role till he was 40?
Luca Badoa.
So is that where we're putting Kubica now?
No. I don't. I mean, Williams definitely wanted Kubica in the seat. But I mean, they were compromised by how little time they had to evaluate both drivers. The only comparison they were able to make was during the post Abu Dhabi tire test, when they had both Sorokin and Kubica and driving. And it was based off of that test that the analysis was made that Sorokin was not only quicker in short run, but the long run pace as well. So in both key areas, Sorokin was quicker. That's a fact. So in regards to, you know, choosing between those two, it was the lap time that came down to it. But Kubica, in taking this development role, yeah, I'm sure he'll be good for the development of the car. But I like the fact that he is easing himself back into F1. He's not ruled out the potential of a future drive. So, for all we know, we could see him back in a full-time race role once he's ironed out the issues.
So the issue that Matt is pointing at is, he's saying it is just all about the tyres. But Matt, that does kind of still point to the fact that they've made the right decision, because if he's not good at driving with these tyres yet, and these tyres are part of modern Formula One, that unfortunately means he's not a good enough race driver to be in the championship next season. So again, it's really hard to criticize Williams for not picking Kubica. See how specific I'm being. There is reason to criticize Williams, but just not for that particular shout.
Well, again, it's a question of where are you going to shade your choice. The thing about Kubica is we know that he has been at, when he was at his peak, one of the best drivers on the grid.
That's a bold claim. And, that's a bold claim, you know, Matt.
It's a true one, though.
I have found some evidence to support it coming from, I don't know, this driver called Lewis Hamilton. Maybe you've heard of him.
I have heard of him. And whilst I respect Lewis Hamilton's opinion greatly, there has been a massive kind of sea change in how the internet, which is where we spend our time, Facebook posts, Twitter posts, etc., from even like a few months ago, when he was doing the Renault tests, Mark Hughes wrote an article saying, in the generation of Hamilton, Alonso, blah, 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 Kubica was the best of them all. And I remember reading the comments below that tweet, and it was all, you're nuts, you're an idiot. We were all there in 2010, 2009, etc., and we don't remember that. And then slowly but surely, there's been a groundswell of hype where suddenly, almost now, suggesting that he wasn't the next Senna is almost heresy.
Are you just setting me up to go read the quotes that I found from 2008 from Hamilton?
It's what I do, man. It's what I do. I make you look good.
You make me look good. Okay, Hamilton. Kubica is a contender. This was in Eurosport, by the way, if you're interested. He is convinced Kubica is in the title. Here we go. I quote, I think he's always been a title contender from race one when he qualified second on the grid. I've always known he's got great talent and he would be strong as soon as BMW pulled their socks up. And they have done. The Telegraph, sensational, Kubica in the 2008 Formula One Championship. Sauber's Kubica has the ability and determination to threaten again. BBC Sport, headline, why Robert Kubica is arguably the best driver in Formula One. That's from October 12, 2010. Shall I continue? Keep on going? Ah, here's Hamilton again, from a Polish website. For years, I have told everyone that he will come to Formula One one day because he has three qualities needed to achieve this goal. That would be world champion. Talent, faith in his own abilities, and focus on hard work. I consider him a driver who is infernally fast, never forgives, rides on the edge of risk, but fair. And that's your own Lewis Hamilton making these quotes back in the day. So this is not part of the current internet hype.
That is absolutely true. I mean, at the very, very worst, without the accident that he had, Kubica would have been one of the greatest F1 drivers not to win a world championship. I would have expected him to win a world championship. I mean, can you imagine him at Lotus in 2012, potentially with Raikkonen or Grosjean? That would have been pretty epic. But the thing is, that's not the same Kubica we have anymore, is it?
But stop there, Chris, because I kind of understand that sentiment, and I'm sympathetic to it. I know he's very popular, but if we just use our reason, we could say that we are exercising some confirmation bias here, because I'm sure there are many drivers who have had lots and lots of potential, had really dynamic starts to their Formula One careers in the first 3, 4, 5 years, and then petered out. Had any one of those had their career cut short, you might have been able to dig back and find those same quotes about that, because potential is so much easier to have than fulfilling it. And you're having to create this narrative. Imagine if he was at Lotus. Imagine if he was here. It's not something tangible we can really hold on to. And I think it certainly is not unique. I mean, Hülkenberg was pegged to be the next great thing, was he not, by a big corner of the internet?
Probably still could be if he was given the right machinery.
But here's the thing. I think the difference is with Kubica, we're not really talking about potential. He didn't show up and have flashes of inspiration in a career that was a year or two long. You're talking about somebody who led the title. You're talking about someone who Hamilton acknowledged coming through the karting ranks all the way up into the Formula One ranks as being somebody who had the ability and potential to be a world champion. He does not say that about everyone, to my knowledge. And he said it in the day when he was racing against him. And that's why I think it's a little bit, while I would agree with you regards the current internet hype, totally, if you go back and look in the day, we can see that he was rated. He would have been on the level of a Vettel or an Alonso or maybe a Ricciardo. Somebody like that, I think, is a fair comparison. Whether he would have continued to race at that level or gotten lazy, well, you know, that's a hypothetical no matter how you slice it. But what we also know is that much like Hamilton, Kubica did come to Formula One without a lot of backing and without a lot of money. So my money would be on He would not have gotten lazy. The closer he got, the harder he would have worked.
NS2589 in the chat room says, Hamilton is right. Back in his day, Kubica was as good as anyone. He is just past his prime and can't keep pace with all the young blood. And that's fair. I mean, he's not a dissimilar age to me, and I struggle at five aside.
I mean, he definitely is, you know, past it now. And as much as Kubica will say that he doesn't have any limitations in driving the car,
age.
The fact is, he does. He does because of his injury. Limits to what he can do, and it's up to this kind of rehabilitation process, if you like, of now that he's sort of over the injury, there's the rehab of getting back into a single seater racing car.
Absolutely. The guys who consistently were in Formula One struggled as they got to his age and beyond, so having that gap is critical. Christopher Fonseca says he was leading the championship in a mediocre BMW, so that further enforces Matt's point, and was properly set to take the Ferrari seat. In fact, I think I heard that he had an agreement to be Alonso's teammate, pre-signed, if you like. Philip Allen points out Renault didn't pick Kubica in early 2017 as well. I'll get to that in a second. Dom Byrne, fair points, Spanners, but unlike Hulk, Kubica won a race. Loads of good points from the chat room. Obviously a very, very popular guy. But if we go to what Karun Chanduk said about him, he said, and this is, I think, fair, he's had plenty of chances in 2017 to prove he was fast enough, Matt, and he just, unfortunately, failed to do that.
Well, okay, fair enough. I wouldn't disagree. Sorotkin was faster. But for Williams, to me, and this is the crux of it, if you go with Kubica, you're going with an unproven quantity. You do not know if he's going to be able to get on top of the tires and deliver the lap times you need. If you go with Sorotkin, he is also an unproven quantity who comes with more money and more immediate pace. Now what they've done, and this really to me is fascinating, is they've signed Kubica for quite a number of free practices, yep, and to be the development driver. So if Sorotkin fails, he's right there. And if he does get on the top of the tires and is faster, then I think it's one and done for Sorotkin. And you're going to see a good old Bobby K back in that driver's seat.
And here's the crucial thing for Robert Kubica fans to hang on to. He is, and Williams have confirmed, he is the reserve race driver. And we see reserve race drivers in races all the time. So don't give up hope. You could be seeing your man in a Grand Prix before you know it. Okay, so let's move away from Kubica. They've not picked him. However, Williams have had to make other decisions. Go on, Matt. Go on, jump in. The first time you've stopped me rolling onto a bumper in 2018. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I was going to say faster than you can say Giovinazzi, you can see a reserve driver in Formula One.
There we go. Can I play my bumper now? Oh, Chris wants to interrupt as well. Ah, this is a cluster.
Well, I think we need to kind of address how we ended up getting down to Sorokin and Kubica anyway. And I know this is something you've brought up a lot, Spanners, which is when you've got the likes of Wehrlein and Kvyat and De Resta without a seat for 2018. And it's important to stress how the commercial package played a significant role in Williams' decision. And when I say commercial package, I don't just mean, you know, financial backing.
I wish I'd put that in the show notes, Chris. Oh, I did. In this bit, just down here where I say Williams' decision. Oh, Chris, I missed you.
I was looking at the wrong bit.
You were. It's okay. Yes, Williams did have a big decision to make, and I had a decision to make. Was humiliating you worth getting my bumper in? I clearly decided yes. But yeah, you're right. They have picked the finances, and also they have come out as a team, and they've decided to just present this united front. Williams tweeted, "Here's our driver decision." There was a minute-long video with Claire Williams, who I enjoy listening to. She seems a very, very intelligent woman. This video was not good. And I don't mean it to be mean, but she had a minute-long video justifying the decision to hire Sergei Sorokin over Paul De Resta, over Kubica, and over Pascal Wehrlein. Now, when you have two proven Grand Prix drivers, and I know people will say that Paul De Resta is less that because he hasn't had much experience in this hybrid era, but he is a race driver who did not look out of place in F1, a real F1 driver. And much more recently, Pascal Wehrlein, whilst maybe not the next Lewis Hamilton or Fernando Alonso, is certainly a Grand Prix driver with experience and pace. When you pick Sergei Sirotkin out of GP2 over those two guys, and he comes with a reported $15 million bursary, I don't know if that's the right term, you are picking him for financial reasons. So this minute-long video where Claire laid out how good he is at engineering, I don't know if they mentioned his engineering degree and all his feedback and how she was so hopeful for the future, it really just left a bitter taste in my mouth, especially when it's an establishment such as Williams that I have been a fan of since about 1986.
The thing about that, though, is everything she said is true.
Oh, you know, absolutely. They're all truisms.
You know, it is absolutely true. But when you've got Wehrlein and Sirotkin, who apparently initially were bringing the same sort of money to the table, I believe Sirotkin's initial offering was around the same as Kubica's, about 8 million. And then when they asked him if he had any more, that's when he bumped it up to 15 million.
Really?
Yeah. And so, you know, that, I guess that eased the decision for them. You know, what I was saying about a commercial package, you know, we've been talking so much about a Kubica comeback story that in itself would have just generated so many commercial opportunities for the team, that even if he was bringing less money to the table, they would have more than made up for that. And so the reason that we're not seeing the Drestas, the Wehrleins, and the Kvyats, that decision was probably very, very largely significantly based on the finances.
No.
And that's how you ended up with, you know, Sirotkin and Kubica in the first place. I just think it's interesting to dissect how we came from, you know, these five or six drivers who were contenders down to these two quite unlikely ones, in my opinion.
That's a great point. Matt.
Yeah, well, I would go with the surprise to me is Kvyat being overlooked in all this. I'm surprised he couldn't come up with the funding. And I'm very surprised somebody with his level of race experience, someone who was fast in a Red Bull, and who would therefore have had access to a lot of what was learned by Red Bull and then at Toro Rosso, didn't even seem to get serious consideration. I mean, Kvyat was fast. He earned his third in China. And you could see with Williams a chance at real redemption for him. I mean, even Franz Tost was willing to admit that, like, the kid deserves to be in Formula One. It just didn't work out with his particular team.
I mean, Wehrlein makes even more sense given that he is a Mercedes driver and Williams are a Mercedes customer.
So it's worth pointing out that Joe Saywood, friend of the show, Joe Saywood, do you think we can say that yet? Wrote an article basically saying that Williams are going back to their traditional path of spending money on the engineers and the engineering rather than the drivers. Chris, I know you're dying to get in, but let's just play this out a little bit because I slightly disagree. There is a difference between not paying superstar wages and out and out bringing in not just one pay driver, but two pay drivers.
Okay, the idea of pay drivers is, I hate addressing this because every driver is a pay driver. Okay, this is not a cheap sport. Every single driver comes with significant financial backing, whether it's because their family's rich or because they've got the backing of sponsors and companies and businesses and whatnot. It is just a fact of racing.
Okay, before you move on, let's say that there is a difference. There is a difference between a youngster who is really talented getting picked up on a program, for example, and a kid who has just been pushed through at every level with family money. There is a difference. You might be right. You do need funding to get to every level, but there is a difference. When we talk about pay driver, let's be clear. We're talking Stroll, Palmer,
Chilton. Here's the thing. If you are not a talented racing driver, you will be found out so quickly. Your sponsors will pull out and you will get no further.
Not if your sponsor is your dad. That's not true. If your sponsor is your dad and he's a billionaire, he'll push you through at every level. Go on, let Matt yell at me for a bit.
Did I just hear somebody mention the word Ericsson somewhere?
Go on, Chris. Defend your incorrect point.
I've forgotten what the point of making now.
You were saying everyone's a pay driver, and I agree with you to some extent, but I'm just saying there are degrees of it, and so let's not mischaracterize. When I say pay driver, you know who I'm talking about.
Okay, right, fine, but that's not to say that, you know, Sorokin isn't a good racing driver. I mean, if I was going to be brutally honest, I would say all three of Williams' drivers for this year are suboptimal.
Fair.
Yeah, well, again, we have the unknown quantity of Kubica. Will he get on top of the tires? Or Sorokin, will he be able to race to the times that he puts down on laps? Now, I think if I understand correctly, you might actually play some racing games there, Spanners.
One or two.
Did you ever notice this thing where when you're on the track by yourself, like setting up your car, you can go faster? And then when you go and do an actual race, even if you get ahead of everyone and you're in clean air, do you notice that your lap times are never quite as quick as when you're in the track by yourself?
No, he's cut to the core of me.
And this is the thing. I think this is, you know, this is a trade-off with Kubica. You're going to guess that he's going to get closer to his optimum lap time because he has the race experience at the Formula One level. With Sorokin, that's where your unknown quantity is. And this is what people would complain about with Massa and with other rookies a lot of time. Grosjean, famously, as a rookie, was very fast, but very crash prone. And that is the one thing that is going to be very difficult for Williams to deal with. And that may be why he had to bring enough money to make up potentially for the points and chassis and wings and everything else that they're going to have to be replacing.
Jeansy's come into the chat room and said that big name sponsors put their money behind someone they can get a return on, and they get that because they have proven themselves. So kind of backing up what I was saying.
Not really. I think he's actually backing up what I'm saying, because he's looking at people like, he's talking about people like Massa, Perez, people who come with money but are rated by those sponsors.
I'm so glad you brought up Perez, because like a Sergio Perez is what Williams needed, isn't it? You know, somebody with a lot of money and a lot of talent as well, it turns out. But the thing with the money, though, and I'm glad you kind of brought it up, because Williams are trying to, you know, make a long-term gain in all this. You know, it's not like you keep saying, it's not a cheap sport, and any extra money they can get out of Sorokin, it will go into the development pot. You know, just to kind of survive, you know, your sponsors will take care of that. But then in terms of actually improving the car and your infrastructure, you need that extra backing.
Jeansy confirms, I'm backing Spanners. Chris, you'll never care.
You made your point terribly then, Jeansy. That just makes no sense to me.
Trumpets.
Yeah, or the money will go into the replacements bin for all the things that he breaks. But I think the point that Jeansy was trying to make and that Spanners is making is very clear. The return on the money to the sponsors has to do with how many units they can move based on using that person in their PR and in their advertising. It has nothing whatsoever to do with where they finish in a race. If I sponsor a Formula One driver, I don't get extra money if they win a race. I get extra money when they do ads for my company and when people want to invest in my company because they want to be around this person because they have that hype and reputation. Doesn't really have so much to do with their actual results on the racetrack.
Ouch. Christopher Fonseca in the chat room. Surely any extra money Williams make will be spent on babysitters when they want to leave the drivers at home for the weekend. But hey, it is a valid choice to take that money and try to engineer their way out of the mid-table and get themselves up to the front. What I worry is that it is going to be quite demotivating for the team. Sure, they can spend money. You can go all down these different routes. You can explore all these different aerodynamic options. But at the end of the day, you might have two drivers who can't get the potential out of the car. And then you're going to have 300 frustrated engineers wondering why they bother.
The thing is, right now, Williams need the improved engineering. Because since 2014, the results have been getting worse and worse and worse and showing no sign of improving. So what would be the point in signing an Alonso or a Hamilton if they had the chance, if the car physically cannot do better than eighth place in a race?
Philip Allen, if Williams end up eighth or ninth in the championship next year, then what? And that's a fair point. It's also a possibility. The lap time deficit that Lance Stroll has to a top driver is potentially enough to just wipe out any engineering gains they make with that money, and also they're going to lose out on championship money for a second year in a row.
I think you're selling Lance a little bit short there.
No, he's off pace, and until he shows that he's not off pace, that is the reality of Williams' situation. Not knocking the lad. I'm sure he's trying. He's a gentleman. He goes about his racing the right way. He's not knocking anyone off track, but the pure lap time isn't there right now.
Race pace isn't bad. Qualifying is the real issue for him, unless it's at Monza and it's wet.
Fair enough. Hey, tell you what, let's tell. Oh my God, I really am truly just rusty. I've forgotten how to talk. I've got a commentary gig at the weekend. It's just shocking. Okay, let's listen to somebody who does know how to speak, and his name is Karun Chanduk.
Still down here on the red carpet at the Autosport Awards, shouting to Karun Chanduk. Karun, good to see you again.
Nice to see you. I wish I brought my coat.
It's got cold now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's freezing now, but anyway. So it's always nice to be here.
Off the back of an incredible 2017 season, one of the best for quite a long time, I think lots of people agree. I mean, how amazing has it been to be in the course of the paddock watching this amazing bout between Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel all year?
Well, it's been a long time since we've had two teams in contention. You know, Mercedes have done an outstanding job in this V6 hybrid era. And it's really nice to see someone else right up there. And, you know, Red Bull won some races. They got the car slightly wrong. They had a few issues early on in the season, but they started to come good. Max was brilliant, particularly in the last third of the season or last quarter. So, bodes well for the future. Yeah, it's just a really good season, I think, in general.
I'm glad you mentioned Max Verstappen, because I think a lot of people are talking about the fact that Red Bull could become a genuine championship contender in next year. Do you think it could be three teams going at it next year?
I think, hopefully it's going to be four teams, to be honest, because if Renault get the power unit right, we should have McLaren up there. They've got two very, very good drivers in their cars next year. So really, if Renault get it right, we should have Red Bull and McLaren along with Ferrari and Mercedes. You know, it'd be fantastic for Formula One to have four teams up there.
Now, the mid-pack battle has been really impressive all season long, especially when you look at the likes of Force India, Williams, the Renault Works team, and Toro Rosso, all fighting in there in the mid-pack. What's really stood out for you in terms of how the teams have evolved during the course of the season? Who's really impressed you?
I think the progress Renault have made, since becoming a Works team, this year they've made really, really good steps forward. The car was very competitive, especially since, I think, Silverstone onwards. They brought an update to the floor, and they were very fast, but still fragile. You know, unfortunately, they were a bit unreliable. But I think out of the midfield teams, you'd have to pick Force India as a standout. Fourth place, more points than, I think, the next three teams combined, I think, even at the end of the year, I believe. So that's an outstanding achievement, really, for a team on their resource. You know, less resources than Renault, less resources than McLaren, similar to Williams, you'd have to say, and punching well above their weight. So, I think Andy Green and his team at Force India do a great job.
Well, it's going to be an interesting night. Obviously, the International Racing Driver of the Year prize will be the one everybody will look for. If it was up to you, who would you give it to?
It's quite hard to pick anyone beyond Lewis, to be honest. It's a boring answer, but the bloke's been outstanding this year. I think out of all his world championships, this has been his best one as a personal performance. No errors, no mistakes, apart from that little quali shunt in Interlagos when the championship was done anyway. He's been brilliant this year. And I think his qualifying laps, if you look at in Suzuka, Malaysia, Silverstone, they come to mind, have been brilliant. And they've really laid the foundations for his success. So hard to look beyond him, really.
Well, it's great to hear your insight. I know you want to get inside out of the cold, so thank you very much, Karun, for talking to us.
Thank you. Yeah, you get blondie instead.
I tell you what, Karun Chanduk is number two on the list of F1 media personalities that I want to be my mate. He's fair enough. He doesn't go out of his way to offend anybody, but he's just such a solid kind of person to just narrate F1. And I just kind of think, oh, I'd love to sit down and just have a brew, not even a drink. I'm going to sit down and have a cup of tea with Karun.
Who's number one on that list?
Steve Jones.
Oh, of course.
You just want to bask in his reflected glory. Of course you do.
I don't watch Channel 4. So.
Oh, you should. Okay, so when Steve Jones came into Channel 4, everyone went, the guy off E4, what is going on? And then Steve Jones just came in and said, do you know what? Hang on, we'll have to do the voice. "Do you know what, boyo? I'm just going to make Formula One more like me." And then he did. An example to us all. Okay, let's move on. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Chris, we've actually got a lot going on in 2018, and we're going to make some changes with the live stream. We've had a lot of video and graphical work done for both this and for e-radio show that you and Matt have been doing. I think it's long overdue that we give a big shout out to Steve Amy in Australia and Felix Bowen in Sweden, who have provided all the beautiful images that people get to look at when they come to our YouTube channel.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's some exciting stuff in the pipeline for 2018, isn't there? And they do a fantastic job. They make us look great.
There we go. And people will be pleased to know that this moving flag background is disappearing. I did have more than one person say, if you're watching Missed Apex live whilst drunk, it can actually make you feel seasick, which is something I had not accounted for. Okay, so thanks very much to those guys. We could not have gotten as far as we have without... have I pronounced it wrong again? Bolin. Sorry, Felix Bolin. Danish names are so hard to pronounce. Anyway, so there's a lot we're doing, Chris, as we go forward. We're going to do some real life stuff as well. You, me, Jeansy, Bradley Philpott have all expressed an interest, and I think Catman, who does our quizzes as well, in doing Missed Apex Live. What do you think about that?
Oh, I love the idea of it. It's just going to be a new experience, I think. You know, we've got to keep things fresh and exciting, and I think it'd be a good chance for the listeners to get involved as well.
Well, I'm not expecting huge crowds or anything like that, but what I'm thinking is that we will book a venue within a drinking establishment that has a room where we can set up a podcasting table and maybe some entertainment, some kind of tabletop racing game, something like that. We're not going to charge people to come in, but if you are interested in coming down and just watching us record a podcast live, unfortunately without Matt Trumpets, unless we get really good internet, then just let us know. Contact me in some way and let me know that coming down and seeing us talk about F1 in person and having a drink with us, of course, is something that you would like to do. So you can email me at spannersready@gmail.com. You can get in touch with me on Twitter at spannersready. And I have my DMs wide open, so slide on in there. Get in touch with the crew as well if you want to, at Missed Apex F1 also has its DMs open. Or you can comment on any of the site posts, any of the Facebook posts. We watch them all. So very early in the season, we want to get together for a social more than anything, but we will also record a podcast. Let us know if you want to join us. And that would be in the London area. The other thing we're doing next week is we are karting. You and me, Chris, we're going to be at Daytona with 30 other contributors, listeners and friends. And we, in fact, have a like waiting list of like 7 or 8 people as well. So really, really pleased with the response to that. We want to do more. We want to do bigger. So get in touch with me again if you're interested in coming karting on future events. And we'll make sure that we do maybe quarterly karting events. But Chris, you're going down.
Ah, seconds out round two. I'm ready for this.
But you were so far behind on the first one, it wasn't even funny.
I never got a clean lap.
That's because you're not very good at karting.
No, because I went out the back of the queue, and I tell you what, if you put me up at the front, just give me some clear air straight out the baton, then I will Sorokin you.
So, yes, we are going to Daytona, Milton Keynes, but okay, I'm going to request that you go out the front so that you have absolutely no excuses.
Oh, that's going to backfire, isn't it?
But let's say I do beat you. You have said to me, reasonably, that I have had an extra lesson from Bradley Philpott at a go-kart track about how to go faster.
Not an extra lesson. You've had a lesson. I've had none.
And it was like a one-to-one tuition from one of the best driving instructors, race instructors in the whole country. And he took seconds off me straight away, and he kept taking time off me with every word. So you've got a point. So we are going to go down to the border of England and Wales to a go-kart track, which we will announce soon. And you and I, we're going to take cameras and we are going to film Bradley Philpott giving both you and I karting lessons, then advice on where we went wrong, some consolidation laps, and then a final race off. And there will be no excuses from that point on, Chris.
No, it's going to be proper gloves off. You and me on a level playing field for once.
Come in, Matt.
Yeah, I'll be there. Buy me a ticket.
Stop making that your condition. I have no money.
Oh, come on. They're cheap. You have an internet money tree. You can shake it.
Internet money. You can support us on Patreon, and I promise I won't spend it on Matt's plane ticket. You can just go to missedapexpodcast.com, and if you go to the About and Support pages there, there is a direct link. You can support us on Patreon, and we would greatly, greatly appreciate that because we have big plans for 2018. And somebody else who has huge plans for 2018 is McLaren's reserve and test driver, Lando Norris.
So we're still here on the red carpet, the Autosport Awards, and with me is
Jake
McLaren,
well
young
here.
Gun, Lando Norris, and of course, European Formula 3 champion. What an amazing year it's been for you.
No, it's been a very good year for me. Winning Formula 3 my rookie season, getting to drive some Formula 1 cars. A big season for me, and hopefully for more in the future.
Let's talk about the Formula 3 campaign. I was there at Po when you were having an amazing weekend. I know, obviously, it's the one that got away. I know it's the one that got away, but you demonstrated that weekend that this is your moment, the time is here, and you are here not to make up the numbers. You are here to be taking over from Lewis Hamilton when he's done and dusted. You are the new man in.
Yeah, I mean, I try and do as well as I can. That weekend was going very well. I think the team had done a great job all weekend, and we were very fast in qualifying. Very fast in the race, but got quite unlucky with a suspension failure. So quite disappointing for the Grand Prix because the team won the year before. So I would have liked to kind of continue the winning streak for them there. But there was plenty more other races where I won and made everyone happy. So it was a good season.
And it was great to see at Macau when the championship was all done and dusted. You're in there in the fight for the victory. You came within a couple of tenths of it, and your immediate reaction is, I'm coming back next year. I'm doing it again. I want to win this one.
I want to come back next year. It's not a definite yet. It's such a cool race. It's so fun, so unique, and I think that's why every driver wants to go and do it. But, again, that didn't go to plan. It wasn't as good as what I hoped. Still second, but Macau is a race that everyone wants to go and win. And for me, and I think for the package I had and everyone around me, I think the win was very much on the cards. I just didn't perform as well as I should have done. But let's hope to a 2018 or a 2019 drive there.
Well, yeah, the next few weeks, I mean, you're going to be going to Daytona to race in the 24-hour, which is an amazing step for a British youngster like yourself. McLaren, obviously, will have you on the books again, and maybe even a Formula 2 championship title. I mean, it is so close now. I mean, this is something that you must have been watching Formula 1 10 years ago thinking, wonder if that could be me, and now it's genuinely happening.
Well, it wasn't even that long ago. I think even, you know, 3-4 years ago, even then I was thinking, God, this is a long way away. I'm kind of slowly progressing, but it always seemed quite far away. But then every time you take a small step, it seems to become still a lot closer. And I still don't, you know, I'm not close enough yet. I'm not in Formula 1, but I'm definitely the closest I've been. You know, I'm with McLaren, and I should have some more opportunities next year to drive in an F1 car and sure what I can do, but yeah, I think it's a bit of a waiting game on hopefully getting a seat at McLaren, but around 2020 I think is the aim. But yeah, F2 next year, and that's the aim to win.
Do you know what? It's going to be amazing. We've had the Hamilton and Button era. That's been and gone. And now it's going to be the Norris and Russell era, isn't it? It's going to happen. I can see it.
No, I definitely think, you know, George is a very good driver, and I'll be racing against him next year. So I definitely think it's going to be a good battle between us. Especially me joining Carlin, I feel like we might not start off the best, but just like F3, I think we'll progress a lot throughout the season. And hopefully by the mid-season, or a bit hard to say. We thought the same in F3, so we kind of struggled a bit more and then progressed, but we came out with a bang and won in the first weekend. So yeah, I think between me and George, it's going to be a fun year, and hopefully we go on to do more things.
I think I speak for everybody listening when we say we can't wait to see you both in F1, getting on the top step of the podium. Lando, good luck tonight, and have a great, great season in 2018.
Cheers, thank you.
Oh my goodness, Chris, looking at that screen grab of Lando Norris that we have there. He's so young. Am I just that old now? It's like police officers. When the potential F1 drivers start looking young, that means you're old and past it. But you follow the junior series more than we do. Is this guy the sensation that he's being built up to be?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. I have been watching this guy race since he was in Ginetta Juniors. And the that year when he won three different championships as well, one of them being the Toyota and the other series, I can't quite remember. He just had an astonishing year, the year that he won the Autosport Award and got the McLaren test drive as well. And then ever since then, you know, the hype around this guy has just been exceptional, and he really is a big deal. And I know we've said this about a lot of guys in the junior categories. I mean, Martin Brundle was somebody who fought Ayrton Senna for a Formula 3 title back in 83. And then when they both got into Formula 1, Senna just found more than what Brundle was able to. I think that's probably the most famous example of, you know, the difference between the junior categories and what actually happens when you get into F1. So I'm looking forward to seeing how his full-time F2 campaign goes.
Absolutely. And Bradley Philpott said that he was one of the most prepared young drivers coming into F1, even more so than Lewis Hamilton. But Matt, he is going to a difficult place. Is it a poison chalice where he's going? He's going to McLaren, who, of course, are about to announce a new sponsor soon.
I don't know that McLaren so much is poisoned. The worry for me, as with Williams, I guess, would be the finances, really. Because I don't know how long the backers, Mansur OJ and Sovereign Wealth Fund, are going to be willing to sink huge amounts of money into a Formula One operation when they have a perfectly serviceable, fancy road car division that is actually earning them a profit. And it has long been my contention that that road car division started all of McLaren's problems, and it might very well be the end of them having a shot at the sharp end of the field. They might be willing to settle for like Force India kind of performance. Because as we see from Red Bull, Mercedes, and Ferrari, it takes quite an investment if you want to be world champion as a constructor.
It's sad to hear, because especially this year when they have now a Renault engine and they've been complaining about Honda so much, Matt, there is no excuse now. The excuses are absolutely over with. And they've recently come out with their engineering department saying they've had 2 weeks of hell trying to repackage their chassis towards the different Renault philosophy, because the turbo is now in the rear, so there's less room for the gearbox, less room for the suspension, but more room for fuel, which was an area where they definitely struggled with the Honda. But now they have that Renault, and now they've got rid of everything they were blaming the lack of pace on last season. It's kind of a bit of a do or die. If we don't start seeing results in the first third of the season, it's going to kind of sour everything they've said for the last 3 years.
Well, yes, and this is the case. This is very, very much the case in that they've really talked themselves into a corner. Now they say with Renault, we'll be like Red Bull. But if they're not, you have no one left to blame but yourselves at this point.
Yeah, I think that if they're not aiming for third in the constructors, then what are they doing? Basically, you know, they kind of have to be aiming for the top Renault power position. But I don't think that, you know, if they don't beat Red Bull in the championship this year, I won't be surprised, because obviously Red Bull have learned how to optimize the Renault engine, down to a T, whereas McLaren have got a lot of learning to do. And they may suddenly find when they hit the road in testing that they come up with all sorts of issues now that they've had to basically repackage the entire rear end of that car. It may not work with the design philosophy that they have, and they have to work around that. You know, I know that we say that, you know, they've got a better engine now and that's it. They should just be going out and scoring podiums every single race, but it's not quite as simple as that.
It kind of is, though. And I've had 3 years of people making excuses for McLaren, again, a team I like and a team I want to do well. And I'm fed up of every time they score a seventh or do quite well in qualifying, the faint expectations that everybody has of them. It's like, yes, that was the same as a victory. Well, that time is over now. They've got everything they said they needed. The time where we can judge them by a mid-table team is over. We are now judging them for a top team. If they finish fourth in the World Constructors' Championship, that is a fail for McLaren Renault. Fail. Absolutely is.
No. You would expect them to finish behind Red Bull in the championship this year almost. If they beat them, I will be surprised, just because Red Bull have got the optimization with the Renault engine and McLaren are on an uphill task with something brand new and completely alien to them. Now, you know, that's not to say, you know, by the sort of halfway through the season, three quarters of the way through the season, yeah, they should be on that pace, absolutely. But, you know, you've got to think of the season as a whole. And you've also got to think, what if Renault haven't sorted out their reliability issues yet as well?
It'll be the same for Red Bull then. Matt, come on. Last season, you were telling me McLaren, best chassis on the grid. No excuses. They are fighting with Red Bull. They need to be dicing with Red Bull race after race after race.
I agree. They need to, at the very least, be a clear fourth and well ahead of Force India, or they are underperforming what their expectations are. Given how much they talked up that Renault, if they cannot convert that into points, then it's going to look really ugly for them.
Speaking of ugly, no, I'm only joking. Speaking of tall, which is our next subject, we're going to talk about driver weights and total car weights. Let's hear an interview now with Toro Rosso driver Brandon Hartley.
Still here on the Autosport Awards red carpet, and Brendan Hartley is with us. Brendan, what an incredible season. World Endurance Championship, Le Mans 24 Hours, and Formula One, all in one campaign. That's living the dream right there.
Yeah, it's been something for me. One I'll never forget. I won't take for granted. It's all still sinking in at the moment. I think the next few weeks, when I put my feet up, when I finally get home to New Zealand, I'll be able to make a bit more sense of it. But, yeah, it's been incredible, and I just can't wait to sink my teeth into next year and get my full Formula One debut full Formula One season underway.
And the buzz back in New Zealand must be mega at the moment. I mean, you're the first Formula One driver from the country since Mike Thackwell. That must be quite an incredible achievement, and the country must be absolutely loving the hype right now.
Yeah, there's been a huge amount of support back home, which has been great. I make an effort not to read too much press and not believe everything that's written about myself, but the support's been huge, and it's nice to have that. And but I'm just trying to focus on myself and staying calm, enjoying it, and hopefully doing a good job next year.
And of course, there's always going to be the talk about you being in Toro Rosso, with the chance that maybe Dan Ricciardo or Max Verstappen may move on to one of the Ferrari or Mercedes seats in the future. That opens things up for the Red Bull senior seat, and obviously a chance at the championship there. So could you even envisage 12 months ago that kind of opportunity would open up again?
No. Like everybody else, I didn't see this coming, and obviously the dream of Formula One was always there, but it seemed quite unrealistic, and I guess it proves dreams can come true, and if you make the right call at the right time, and you know, anything can happen. But yeah, I'm focused one step at a time at the moment. Okay, you mentioned Red Bull and further opportunities, but there's no reason Toro Rosso can't grow into a team that can fight for the podium as well. So look, I'm just taking it one step at a time, but it's massively exciting for me, and I'm very pleased that I've made it to Formula One.
Well, it's amazing to have a Porsche driver in World Endurance Championship make it back into Formula One. Brendan, we look forward to seeing you in 2018.
Cheers, thank you.
A massive credit goes out to Jake Sanson sitting out in the cold at the Autosport Award dinner, Chris. You know what it's like to sit there and try and get your microphone into people's faces, and then the pressure when you do get them to actually ask sensible questions.
No, usually where I do interviews, they're lovely and warm. So I'm fine for that.
So the reason I put Brandon Hartley's interview there was because he's obviously a very tall driver. Tell us about the potential changes in the weight management of car plus driver.
Well, there's a proposed idea for the new set of regulations to separate car and driver weight. Currently, you have a minimum weight of a car, but that includes the driver. And this, of course, puts a lot of pressure on taller drivers, who of course weigh more. There's a bit more stress on the teams to make the car lighter to fit the regulations. And this was kind of a big talking point, wasn't it, when the hybrid era first began, because the engines were so much heavier, it was going to disadvantage the likes of Nico Hülkenberg and Jenson Button, the taller among the F1 grid.
Oh, boo-hoo. Matt, cry me a river. Tall people get so many advantages. The only reason you were a good road racing cyclist is because you've got big, long levers. Why should I care how good or bad you fare at motor racing?
Actually, you would have had the advantage at cycling because your overall body mass is less than mine because I am taller. And interestingly enough, do you know who's meeting tomorrow?
I hate these rhetorical questions. I'm not prepared. Tell me. Just give me the answer.
The strategy group. And do you know what they're going to discuss?
Damn, I knew that. And now I don't know this next question. Ugh.
Car and driver weights, amongst other things, with the halo going on and everything else. What we think of as a minimum weight right now may very well change yet again. Not the first time we've seen it, right, Mr. Stevens?
No, most definitely not. I mean, was it? This is the moment. It's about 733 kilograms because of the halo, which they think is worth maybe sort of 5 or 6 kilos that's being added to the overall weight of the car.
Now, it's an interesting thing. I was on Twitter today. I know, shock, surprise. And Red Bull had a thing out about the new technical regulations. And unless I misread it or misremembered it, I'm pretty sure they said it was 743 for the car weight. So perhaps they've tipped their hand a little bit by about 10 kilograms.
Oh, wow. That would be awkward, wouldn't it, if they'd made a car that was 743 kilograms and everyone comes up with a car that's 10 kilos lighter. It would be a bit like when Renault Edam sat in the pit garage for 10 seconds longer than they needed to in a Formula E race a few years ago.
Well, no. They're saying that the minimum weight was 743, but that's actually not what it is in the regulations yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's probably what they're bringing to the table then. Actually, while we're talking about like things that teams have put out there in terms of 2018 regulations, I came across one from Ferrari that says the positioning of the T-wing is under review, which to me that says it's sticking around in a different place. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Summers says that Ferrari may be just blowing some smoke to confuse everybody, but I want to keep it on topic for a second. We're talking about these weight limits, but of course the thing is now that the weight limit is for the combined car and driver. So somebody like Pascal Wehrlein, was complaining that Ericsson was 10 kilograms lighter than him throughout that season. But that brings up an overall concept. Should we be caring that a taller or heavier driver is overweight? Because as far as I'm concerned, tall people can just cry off. When I play basketball, the tall players don't crouch down to help me out. When I'm playing badminton, the tall players aren't restricted how high they can just reach and smash the shuttlecock at my 5'7" frame. I could never be a goalkeeper, even though I loved jumping around and I've got good hand-eye coordination. But there's no outrage. No one is talking about my rights to be a goalkeeper and what we can do to make goals smaller. For me, why do we even care? A heavier person is going to do worse in a motor car.
And how much ballast do you suppose you have to run, or do you suppose Bradley has to run, were he to be racing you on even terms?
And if Bradley Philpott was here, he would say to me and Alex Van Gien, why am I being penalized for being the correct weight for my sport?
It's an interesting point, isn't it? Because you wouldn't expect, you know, a flyweight boxer to go and beat the heavyweight boxer in a straight fight. You know, there's a class system there for a reason. And it's actually, it's quite a nice sporting philosophical question that I don't really have the answer.
So if I say, Chris, we're going to go and play badminton. Matt, we're going to go and play badminton. We go to either side of our courts and we pick up a racket and we hit the same shuttlecock. If we're going to play football, and I do play football against some big guys, we go, we play exactly the same conditions. Now, we're going to go and compete in a motor car. We go and get in the same car. Why suddenly do I need to be penalized?
Okay. If we're being Formula One specific here, this is where Formula One defies the meaning of sport, because people have different machinery, don't they? They're not all racing in the same car. If you were talking about, Formula Two.
They have the same chance to compete in the same car, in the same sport. They're climbing the same ladder. So.
No, you're suddenly expecting the Sauber's going to be a Mercedes?
No, but the guy who starts in Sauber is trying to climb up to Mercedes, the same as the big heavy guy who's trying to climb up to Mercedes.
Right, but you lose that comparison then, don't you? Because everyone's using different machinery. So in a way, you know, it's a sport that incorporates, you know, competition in on a more technical level as well. In terms of just pure driving, it's not really a sport in that sense.
Come on, Matt. Go on, defend tall people.
I shall defend tall people. If we are playing badminton, are we not on the same court?
If we are. The court tennis, is the same size. The same court? Yes, but if your body... Playing, your body...
If we are playing... I'm going to talk over you.
Go for it.
Yeah. If we are playing football, either variety, are we not on the same field?
Yes, but... If you were in badminton, you can hit the shuttlecock about 8 inches higher than I can. How's that fair?
It has not. How high I can hit the shuttlecock has not much to do with how tall I am. However, how fast I can go around a track is directly related to the total amount of the weight the car is. So to me, the car is the field and the driver is the talent. You and I on a football field, well, frankly, at my age, you'd probably clean my clock, although I may have a few surprises for you. But put us both in a car with ballast, then we'd see who's quicker, wouldn't we?
No, not at all. No, in no other sport do we make concessions. Every other sport has an ideal physicality. Basketball, boxing, bowling, wrestling, boxing,
wrestling, UFC, they all have weight classes, and they have those weight classes for a reason. So you're competing on the same playing field, on the same level playing field as your competitor. And this is why the weight is an issue for Formula One. Now, frankly, anybody who follows Formula One is going to tell you the cars themselves are massively overweight. They need to drop about 100 kilos. But the reason to be concerned about the added weight of the halo on the driver is, and we saw this several years ago, I don't know if you remember, there was a year where all the drivers who were above, you know, the size of, say, Massa got very, very skinny, and it became an issue that they were losing so much weight to keep the car under the minimum weight so they could put ballast, that they were beginning to be afraid that people might actually lose consciousness during the race because they had so little body fat left.
Well, this is it. If it was all...
That's an issue.
And I'm going to talk over you. If there was all about mass, then we could put a little child in there. But at some point, you have to do your body mass versus your strength. And, I mean, I took the kids karting at the weekend, and my kid is very small. So my boy's small. My little girl's even smaller. That should be an advantage in the future. But they were up against a really big six-year-old, and he could just wrestle that steering wheel left, right, bang, bang. Whereas my kids were kind of having to shuffle the wheel because they couldn't get their arms all the way over. So physicality is an issue in motor racing. I know people don't like to believe it is. It is. So ultimately, if you get a very, very small person, they might struggle to control that car ultimately. So there will be a balance. There will be an optimal size, as there is for every sport. And I just don't understand why Formula One is special and we need to make concessions for those poor tall people who get made CEOs and get promoted over us and have long, healthier lives and are generally considered more attractive. Boo, tall people. Yay, racing drivers. Let's hear what the boss of Formula One has to say or had to say in December at Autosport.
So here on the red carpet at the Autosport Awards, and with me is the man behind Formula One's turnaround. It's Chase Carey of Liberty Media. Chase, First of all, a huge thank you for everything you gave us in 2017. I mean, the Lewis Hamilton versus Sebastian Vettel showdown, what a brilliant first year for Liberty Media in F1.
Well, I'm not sure we could take too much credit for the two of them competing. I think they deserve that credit, but it was an exciting year. You know, we'd love to have it gone to Abu Dhabi, but but the competition was great, although we hope to make it better. I mean, it's, I think one of our, true objectives is to continue to build on that competition and build on the action and make sure the sport on the track delivers everything it can and should, to fans.
And we're starting to see some really great fan engagement, which is a really important part of what you guys are doing. I mean, the karting at Monza on the Thursday before the race, the introduction at Austin. I mean, it's all giving back to the fans, and it's amazing the turnaround that's happened in the last 12 months. I'm guessing there's more coming.
Well, there has to be. Look, the reason you compete aren't for, at the end of the day, us or the teams or anybody else. You compete for fans. And sports is entertainment. So we should, these events should be entertaining, engaging, exciting, and have a breadth of activities. And we need to recognize when, our events are not a two-hour, just a two-hour race. They're a three-day weekend for fans. So we need to create a breadth of, activities on the track and around the track. That make it, that make it entertaining, make it enjoyable, and make it exciting for fans, for that weekend.
I think one of your greatest achievements at the end of the year was the engagement of the F1 Esports Championship. That's really, again, given back to the fans who play the video game year in, year out, but now they feel part of the show.
Well, when you have a franchise like ours and a world that's changing, I mean, the digital technology is changing, every business out there, and, changing and creating opportunities. And so we have a brand and a franchise like ours. We need to take that and take advantage of these technologies to engage and connect with fans in new and different ways. And certainly I thought the e-games, they did a great job. I mean, the competition was fabulous. The racing was fabulous to watch. And again, it's a place, we need to continue to find ways that our franchise, can take advantage of some of these new technologies to create new experiences, particularly ones for younger fans that, that are clearly, engaging with everything, much more on the devices you hold in your hands than ones that sit on your wall.
So one final question ready for 2018. Obviously, we're engaging new fans. We're embracing the technology to give the current fans a really big boost. But what would you say to the fans that have gone away, and you want to bring them back, obviously, to get them back into the sport? What will they get in 2018 that they haven't got before that will make them want to watch next year?
Well, first, we've been very clear. The history of this sport is an incredibly important part of it. And as much as we want to continue to innovate and energize, we want at the same time celebrate and build on the history of the sport. Same thing we've said about putting races in new locations like the U.S. is, first and foremost, we want to make sure we continue to build on the foundation of the sport in Europe, which is, where the sport, really, was built. And those foundations are second to none in importance. And we want to make sure, therefore, the historic fans that have grown up with the sport, following the sport, that we have a sport that they still cherish and enjoy. They may or may not like everything. When you do some new things, there'll always be a mix of views. But at its core, we need to make sure we're still delivering, what makes the sport special to those fans. And a couple decades ago, when I was at Fox and we took the NFL, we had a slogan: "Same game, new attitude." And that's what I think we need to do here for our historic fans, to make sure they know we appreciate what has made the sport special for them. We want to bring some fresh energy, but it again is not. We're not gimmicking the sport up. We're not, it is going to be a sport that they've loved. What we want to do is make it better. We want to make the competition better, the action better, and enable them to connect with the sport, the drivers, the teams in ways, that they haven't been able to in the past, that hopefully will make it a richer experience for them.
I'm liking the sound of that. Chase Carey, thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Well, all very optimistic, Matt. The two questions I have for you and Chris is, A, rate your optimism on how much they will do for the sport as a whole. But I think more tellingly, they've identified that Formula One is lagging behind other major sports in social media. And Joe Saitwood says Formula One is the biggest sport in the world. Not in participation, not in grassroots, but in viewing audiences, in popularity. I'm not sure about that. I don't know those stats. Don't hold me to them. But it lags behind. Lewis Hamilton has something like 4 million Twitter viewers, whereas a famous footballer, I think it was Ronaldinho, has 10 million Twitter followers. And that is, the same when you go for the clubs, Mercedes, when you go for Barcelona as well. So can is there the potential there for Formula One to catch up? Or is it just simply the fact of that is what Formula One fans are like? Maybe we have an older demographic, for example. I've asked you about seven questions there, haven't I? Sorry, mate.
I'm going to work backwards. The potential is absolutely there for Formula One to catch up. In fact, we know from one of our very own patrons that they have already distributed a survey looking at delivering Formula One over the top to people in certain countries, which sadly do not include the UK at the moment, but happily do absolutely include the US. And I, for one, am thrilled about it. And even for that matter, my viewing options on ESPN now extend to being able to get ESPN directly without having to subscribe for an entire cable package. That's never been the case for any Formula One coverage I've ever had the opportunity to see before. Things are changing. And I like his same game, new attitude approach. And very much what it sounded like to me, and you may have taken something different from it, but what it sounded like to me is they realized that the weakness in Bernie's strategy, such as it was, is long-term. The fans were ignored. The fans weren't at the center of the sport being successful. And it sounds like they want to put the fans at the heart of the sport, and they feel like that will energize them. And if they adopt new digital strategies, and we've already seen them take some strides with their new director's cuts and stuff like that, unseen footage, that they will be able to grow their audience and grow the worth of their events. And they have lots of companies under their umbrella that can help them do this. Most obviously, Live Nation, which is one of the biggest music act bookers in the world, if I'm not entirely mistaken about that.
Yeah, I think Formula One definitely has a lot to learn in terms of the social front. I mean, it should have been blaringly obvious that it's lacking behind other sports. I mean, even behind other motorsports, you know, not even just, you know, football and rugby or the NFL or whatever it is you have in America. And they do, you know, in 3 years, Formula E managed to reach a wider audience on social media than Formula One did. And that is telling in and of itself. And they keep talking about, you know, all these, the kind of mindset that they're going to apply, but we're kind of yet to really see how it's going to be executed. So I guess we'll see how that pans out. I like what they're saying now. It's about what they do next.
Matt G in the chat room. I am sure more would use Twitter if the broadcast were more engaging with it. When I watch endurance racing, I can communicate with the people in the comms box all the time. BBC F1 Jack Nicholls is excellent for that. And I think one of the only people who does it live on a regular basis with his followers. You can tweet him, he'll read it out, he'll respond.
Okay, I mean, they do that in practice, but with a race, it's completely different because there's action all the time. I mean, endurance racing is completely different because you do get lulls in action. You know, endurance racing is not banging wheels for 6 hours. It's very different to sprint racing or even what Formula One is, which is kind of in the middle. So I can see that viewpoint. It's just not really kind of executable on you know, a Saturday or a Sunday in a practice session easily. But
I disagree entirely. If you have your Twitter team set up correctly, you can let things scroll by and pick stuff. People can pick stuff out for you to respond to. You just need the staff to do it.
Oh, haven't we just learned from our experiences with a chat room for the last 3 years, Matt? When the chat room's flying by, you haven't got any chance. When we assign somebody to come and sit in just to monitor the chat room, how much easier is that?
Completely. And this is where perhaps Formula One, I mean, imagine being on the app, watching the race, having a chat room open with other people who are watching the race. Like we've seen on YouTube with Formula E and certainly with some of the endurance racing categories as well. It's a lot of fun when people are watching the race with you and you can communicate back and forth. And then being able to reach out to the broadcasters or the reporters and ask them questions while the race goes on adds a whole extra layer of interactivity, which I think really is going to be the next step for getting more people involved in the sport.
Excellent. Guys, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been quite a buzz to be back in the shed for Missed Apex podcast, and it's definitely kind of lived up to its expectations, and the people who watched it live were treated to a lot of my rusty presenting skills. Hopefully I'll be a little bit better when I'm pit lane reporting for the British Rental Kart Championships this weekend. Make sure you catch them on YouTube and look out for my performances. We'll also be doing kind of like a TV show, the sofa type dealie, where I go, yeah, it was an interesting day's action. I totally understand what was going on there. And interestingly, Formula Fast are going to give me a few laps on Friday afternoon. So when I see the lap times from these top class drivers, because don't forget, this is a qualifying competition for the World Rental Karting Championships, you will be able to see what a mug like me can do compared to those very top line drivers, and then you can take a second and a half off that for Chris. Matt, do we have a comment? Go on, Chris, defend yourself.
No, I at the Autosport show, I went on a sim and was told I was very impressive, and if I had some proper tuition, I could be a proper racing driver. So
wow, yeah. That's like, wow, you got stick your seven it times table nearly right. If someone taught you the seven times table, you would get it correct.
So you're saying you're the Kubica of this whole venture then?
No, I'm the, who's the guy who won the esports? If there was somebody who was maybe hampered in esports, I would be that guy.
To be fair, they literally told you you were being hampered by your lack of experience, education and skill, which is entirely correct.
Yeah, but in terms of my natural ability, I only needed just a little bit of tuition.
Yes, you were very good at sitting in a chair and holding a controller. Congratulations.
No, it was a proper thing. It had a stick shift and everything, and it rocked about.
Did they let you put the racing line on, Chris? I know you need it.
God, no, dude. I didn't even have ABS or anything.
Chris puts the racing line on F1 games. Just FYI, guys.
Yeah, I'm not a racing driver.
That's the whole point of the game, is learning when to brake, accelerate, and turn. That's like playing a platform game where it jumps for you. And by the way, yes, chat room, I would love to do Missed Apex Mario Kart. That's going to happen at some point. All right, Matt, why don't you tell us who has won this week's
Comment of the Week.
Well, this has been a tragically competitive Comment of the Week. But before I begin, I have to say that Mr. Alex Van Gene actually had some advice for you.
Me?
He says that you need to be on form for the British Rental Kart Championships. Banter is a corner of that, and they spot weakness a mile off. So I knew you would appreciate that going into the weekend.
The problem is, I'm a pro. I'll be playing it all very, very straight. And I'm a very sensitive soul. So no, none of this locker room stuff. It's basically television.
Right. So let's run through our possibilities. Peter Yannickas, former McLaren driver. I have to add that height of the driver doesn't matter when driving lorries.
That's technically true. Interesting fact, I was also an HGV driver for at least 18 months total.
Well, there is your route to driving in Formula One, I suppose. Mike Doyle, if you want a championship, hire Lewis. Felix Bolin, Norris, the only driver spanners can see eye to eye with, literally.
Is that body shaming? He can't win.
Philip Allen wonders if Audi Sport from Formula E have been getting advice from Honda on electrical reliability, which, funny given how poorly reliable they've been. Christopher Fonseca, surely any extra money Williams make will be spent on babysitters when they want to leave the drivers at home for the weekend. And I think it's going to have to be this week's winner is newcomer, and totally lost my scroll here, Matt G with... Erg, being tall makes my job as a Formula One driver harder. I'm even taller than my three supermodel girlfriends. It's really tough.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. Great pick.
Comment of the week.
Make sure you follow Matt at MattPT55. Chris, where can people follow you on Twitter?
You can get me at CStevens_Journo.
Excellent. Follow me on Twitter at SpannersReady and the show at Missed Apex F1. I have absolutely no idea what we're doing next week, but we will be here and I will have already had a victory against Chris Stevens in karting under my belt. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. Chris, why do you keep up the pretense that there's some kind of even battle going on? Unless I'm put into a barrier, it's over for you.
I'll be the one putting you in the barrier.
You have to qualify high enough to get that. And as Chris pointed out,
I will.
Alex pointed out in the chat room that like you had about 20 laps to qualify. So how could you not get clean?
I got like 5 laps and I did not, they were not clean because somebody always went off and in front of me or somebody blocked me or I made a mistake. You know, it's, you know.
So there you go. You made a mistake. You're admitting it. It's because you made a mistake.
Because I was learning the track.
Once again, you're using your own incompetence and lack of skill as an excuse.
Oh, no, you're right. I much rather should be attacking the f***ing lesson you had with Bradley Philpott.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.